Hello and welcome to BSN Extra. I am your host, Jason Barfield. Got a great show today. John Harris from the Houston Texans is going to join us. John, of course, sideline reporter, analyst for the Texans, draft expert, also a part of our ESPN productions. He's been on the call for a lot of Sam Houston games over the last several years. So we're going to sit down and we're going to talk to John, talk about the NFL draft, talk about Zion McCollum going to the Buccaneers, his brother Tristan signing with the Texans. We're going to get into a little Jaquez Ezard talk with the Washington Commanders. And also we're going to sit and talk a little bit about just the program itself and this football program and what his observations have been over the last few years and where he thinks this football is going and how big of a move to Conference USA is and what this is ultimately going to mean for this program and this university. And so really interesting conversation, and we'll have all of that for you right up here next on BSN Extra. The official mobile app of Bearcat Athletics has been updated and is now available in both the Apple App Store and Google Play. The free mobile app will serve as a one-stop shop for video, scores, tickets, and gear. The mobile app will host news, rosters, schedules, highlights, and live stats, with one of the new features of the app to feature live audio streaming, as well as post-game highlights and interviews. Bearcat fans will also be able to customize push notifications for breaking news and information on their favorite Bearcat teams. To download or update your app, search for Go Bearcats in both the Apple App Store and Google Play. Welcome back to BSN Extra. Jason Barfield here, and I am now joined by John Harris, football analyst, works for the Houston Texans, of course, has been a part of the ESPN broadcast for Sam Houston. And John, busy, you know, I know football offseason sometimes feels like it's busier than football regular season, but busy time of year for you, wrapping things up with the draft. How have things been going?
Man, I got to admit, Jason, it's been crazy. On top of the draft, which I do 17 and a half hours of live radio on top of doing live streams and interviews and things like that, I was selling my house, closing on my house, moving my house. We had been in it for 11 years. And on top of that, we were moving some of the stuff to Los Angeles for my daughter. We're moving some of the stuff to Houston. We're moving some of the stuff into three storage rooms. So I had all of that going on and finally got to a stopping point at about 2 o'clock, the day of the NFL draft. And so I was able to kind of collect my thoughts enough to get through the draft. And now it's like, okay, well, what do I do now? I mean, everything has come to a screeching halt. It's like I was going 100 miles an hour and then I came to this, you know, halt, and I'm like, okay, what now? So I started on 2023 NFL draft class, which I started actually back in February, but now I can actually focus on it and start getting ready for that. The schedule release for the Texans comes out on Thursday night. So that'll be fun to see when we play. It's crazy the different events the NFL has created, the draft, the combine, all these events where no football games are played, and yet they can market it in such a way that there's so many people that want to watch and pay attention. And I mean, we know who we're playing. It's just a matter of when, and people want to see that. So that'd be Thursday night. So it'll be fun. Another event the NFL has really maxed out, if you will, to get excited about this offseason.
Hey, man, they can put together events, can't they?
Yeah. It's amazing, amazing what they can do. I mean, Las Vegas, we had my friend Drew Doherty, who covers the Texans with me, was out there for the first, he was out there for the full week up until Thursday, came back Friday. He said it was unbelievable. It was incredible, just the scene of Las Vegas and how they built the stage and where they put it. And it's incredible what the NFL has been able to do.
Yeah, I want to get back to your move real quick. We know what our schedules look like. You know, we can look at the spring. My spring is busy. And I laugh because I think back, I moved into my house on the spring game. The day of the spring game was the day we chose to move when we moved into our house. And I'm like, I remember at the end of that weekend, I'm like, why did I choose this weekend to move? Because, you know what I have going on. We had spring game and a home baseball series. And that's the weekend that I decided, yeah, now's the time to move into a new house. But I think that wasn't my decision to make. I'm pretty sure that was my wife saying, this is when we're moving. You need to figure it out. So, but yeah.
But it's the timing of it. I remember when we had actually decided to sell the house, And we kind of planned it out and thought, you know, okay, if we get a cash offer, we'll close here. If we get a conventional offer, more than likely we'll close. It'll be after the draft. That's kind of what we had thought. Well, we put the house up, the house sold in a day. And all of a sudden they sent us the contract and it said close date, April 28th. And I went, oh, I can't believe this. So they were nice enough to let us, my wife, and I close, actually sign everything the day before, because my wife was going back to LA the next day, the day of the draft. And so they were nice enough to do that, but it forced us to have that thing ready to go. And boy, that was tough, but it was all done. And thankfully I got it all done before the draft. And then I just walked into a house after the draft is over with boxes everywhere. And so I'm still trying to find spots for everything for my son and I. But yeah, you said it best. Sometimes those decisions get made for you, and you just have to kind of work around them. And that's definitely what I was able to do.
Well, let's talk NFL draft. I mean, obviously, here we're all excited. Zion McCollum going in the fifth round to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But before we get into that, I want to talk a little bit about just kind of you and the position that you're in. And, you know, obviously you do your work with the Texans. You've done your work with us on our ESPN productions. But the draft is a big part of what you do and, you know, draft prep and everything like that. What got you interested in NFL draft and looking at the prospects and that side of things and turned it into what it's become for you?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Jason. Part of it was just when I was away from it. I've always been a draft fan. When I was growing up, a guy named Lance Zierlein, who does a lot of stuff for NFL.com, was a couple years older than me, and his brother was my age, Mike Zierlein, who coaches at Tomball High School right now. Their dad was an offensive line coach at the University of Houston. I hung out with them. We had another friend of ours, and we were always growing up in the 80s. You know, we didn't have, you know, we were kind of before Nintendo and all that kind of stuff, but we were always trying to find ways to play games and different games. And we loved this game called Strat-O-Matic, which was a dice game playing baseball. I'm sure kids would look at it now and go, well, how do you play? Well, it was awesome fun back then, but we never liked playing with our own teams. We always liked drafting our own squads, you know, all-star squads. And so we would hold these elaborate drafts, you know, on a Friday night or whatever. And that was our fun, you know, like, oh, okay, we're having a draft for this particular season. So we would draft. And so I've always been interested in the draft. And when I was in high school, I lived in Providence and didn't have ESPN, but I would go down to a sports bar and I would sit in the sports bar, would eat everything on the menu so I could watch the draft. And so I always have been a big fan of it. And it wasn't really until I got out of coaching and was doing something else that I was like, boy, I really miss this. And I just started like, you know, let me watch prospects. Let me write about them and see, you know, where it takes me. And so that kind of led to, you know, opportunities, a radio station here in Houston from afar. And then I joined a radio station in Houston, kind of kept doing it. And then I eventually got in the building here, which has made things a little bit easier and probably a lot more difficult. Just that I can walk down to our film department and say, hey, can you give me these games? And they're like, yeah, sure. Here, we'll throw them on my surface. In fact, I got one on right now, Alabama, Mississippi State from last year, and I can study them. But there's also that part too. I work for the team. So, you know, there's only so far I can go. And I probably with some prospects there, you know, there are guys that, you know, I won't say it at the time, but I'm like, we won't draft that guy, or I really don't like that guy. But, you know, I kind of got to be careful because the team might draft that guy. And then it's like, oh, you know, but for the most part, it's just the love that I had for, you know, drafts. The process has just kind of grown and grown. And I've always loved ball. And when I got out of coaching, I looked for something that was maybe not coaching, but something that could really kind of, you know, be my hobby, if you will. And so I kind of started it as my hobby with the job that I was doing, and it kind of overtook that job and, you know, became what it became. But I love it. I've always been a football guy. I grew up a coach's son. I was always around the sidelines. And that's why, going up to Huntsville to call games and being around the environment, being around you, being around the coaches, being around KC. And of course now John Perry, who's a good friend of mine. I was up there for pro day, and it was great to be in that environment and see guys work out, and just everything about the game, the process, I really like. There isn't anything about it that I don't like. I love the combine. I love the interviews. Anything that I'm able to do around it, I just absolutely love. And my friend Sean Pendergast says, you know, hey, we all geek out about something. And, you know, the draft is really kind of what I geek out about.
I love that. My first draft party that I went to, I was in high school. It was the 95 draft. And the Oilers had a draft party at the Dome. And I talked a couple of my friends into going with me, one who ended up being my wife. And I asked for the first round. I wanted to watch the first round, but it was really neat. They opened up the floor of the Dome. You know, it was set up for baseball, They had some different games that you could play down on the field and, you know, kick field goals, and had the draft going up on the big screen. And, that was, I guess, McNair was the pick for the for the Oilers then. But, you know, I'm a Penn State guy. I've always liked Penn State. So, you know, you had Kyle Brady, Kerry Collins, Keyjohn Carter, you know, so that was that draft. So that was a lot of fun. So that kind of hooked me in on the draft that year as well. That was always, ever since then, that the draft has always been something I've loved following as well.
And it's always that draft is a unique one in some sense. I mean, it's unfortunate what happened to Keyjohn Carter. But that was such a great Penn State team, that 94 team with, you know, Kerry Collins. And I mean, the only close game they really played all year was Michigan and then Illinois, where they had the comeback. Yeah. And it was such a great football team to watch. And that was my first year out of college. Was that 94 season. So I watched, as much football as I could. And so the draft that year also became such an event. And it wasn't just because one team after the other was drafting and here and there, but you also had the Warren Sapp situation. So it was kind of this situation where, you know, news broke about Warren Sapp before the draft. And all of a sudden it's now permeating this first round of like, where does Warren Sapp go? Where is Warren Sapp going to fall? And I think that drama, albeit who knows what was true, we never know, but it created such drama. Where's this guy going to go? What's going to happen?
Pre-Twitter. Yeah. Pre-Twitter. Exactly. Can you imagine that Warren Sapp thing? If Twitter is out, I mean,
It would have been just ridiculously crazy. And it already was, but just the drama that the draft took you into, they took you behind. They're talking to Drew Rosenhaus, and Rosenhaus is like, he answers the phone. He's like, hey, I got to go. This is a team. And it just the whole reality show aspect of it, which I think we're natural voyeurs as it is. But Mark and I, Mark Vandermeer, the voice of Texas, and I, we get on a plane every single week when we go on a road trip or have a home game. We see each other. It's like, this is the best reality show on TV, be it the draft, the schedule release, the games itself, and press conferences. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's like you can't script this stuff, and it makes the draft, you know, so incredibly fun to watch. And so many people have gotten into it that I don't think would have gotten into it. Now, my wife has not gotten into it, so I hope that your wife got hooked at least.
Well, we were friends at the time. We ended up dating and we got married. So it didn't do anything in the early going to deter anything. So at least there's that. But well, let's talk Sam Houston's draft. Let's talk Zion, a guy that you've gotten to see. And I know that you've talked about publicly that you really like. What are the things that the NFL teams are seeing in Zion? What do they really like? And ultimately that got him drafted in the fifth round?
His athletic profile was off the charts. I mean, completely off the charts, which was something that we had talked about. And I remember when I came up for the first game of the COVID spring season. So what was the 2020 season, but in February, I was curious because those guys were going into their senior year and Zion and Tristan, I mean, and it was like, well, what are they going to do? I mean, are they going to play their spring season and then get drafted? Or like, I didn't know what they were going to do. And then talking to KC, he's like, no, they decided that they're going to play. And because they get this redshirt year, essentially, they're going to play in the fall too. I thought, wow, that's really cool. I like that. And I think that's going to help their stock. Obviously winning a championship, I think really helped, but Zion's athletic profile just blew everybody away. At 6'1", 6'2", 200 pounds and playing corner, the way that he moved and what he tested at the combine at 4.33, just that athletic profile was the first thing that grabbed people and said, look, this guy is an athlete. And at the Senior Bowl, I thought there were moments where he was very, very good. I think he's played better. I mean, I've seen him play better, but look, it's a step up in competition. You're learning a new learning a new defense, all that kind of stuff. So you're learning different techniques, but I thought he really held his own at the Senior Bowl, which really kind of put him in the conversation for being one of the top 15 to 17 corners drafted in this draft. And so all of that went together. And then I think, and you guys know this, the McCollums are just sweethearts. I mean, they're just really good people. They're unbelievable. I met his mom, their mom at Pro Day, and she was just so incredibly nice. And she at one point thanked me because I had covered the team and I had talked nicely about them. And so you have that too. And that's always a concern for NFL teams. What they see on the surface is the player, but then what's behind the player? Is there an overbearing dad? Is there a rough family situation? Is there something that you don't know about? And there was none of that, because when you're talking about even though a great athlete coming from FCS, there's an even higher standard that NFL teams are looking for. Unfortunately, they're looking for every little knock, and there really weren't any on Zion at all, given his size, his speed, all that kind of stuff. And so when he tested as well as he did at the combine, I thought, okay, we're on our way. And then one other thing about Zion, and it's funny because his agent, Roddy Williams, is a great friend of mine. We grew up together. We played ball together. He's a year older than me. And so during the COVID spring season, we would be doing a game. We'd be up in the press box, and I would get a text from him. And I looked down. And I was like, are you here? Are you like physically at the game watching? And so I realized at some point, like, okay, he's recruiting. I know who he's recruiting. I know who he's after. But I didn't put two and two together until after the season. He said, yeah, I got the twins and as clients. And so Roddy and I, we can talk openly about these guys because, I mean, he loves them. And he said, Johnny, he said, I saw some of the Senior Bowl. And I wasn't surprised when he told me this. He said, I'm watching at the Senior Bowl, and one of the – I think it was the Jets. I think the Jets were coaching. The Jets coaches had called Zion over, and Zion was talking to one of the other corners. And as he's watching, he can tell that Zion is basically teaching the defense to the other corner. And I was like, not really surprised, given the fact that he's got a high football IQ, but the fact that in a day's time or whatever it was, that he could take what the Jets had coached him to do, his experience at Sam, the defense that he learned there, and then share it with this player. And I don't remember who the player he said was, but to share it with him and like instruct him, I thought, boy, he's got everything they're looking for, outside the fact that he didn't play at Alabama or he didn't play at Iowa or he didn't play at Oregon. And so I think all that worked in his favor. Obviously winning a championship, I think, worked in his favor. And I think teams just had to get comfortable with everything else about him. And I think they did. And that's why they ended up, I thought he should have gone earlier, but the draft is such a weird animal. You know, you have teams that call you and say, hey, we were thinking about drafting you in the third round, but then this other guy came up, so we took him, and then we didn't have a pick till later, so we couldn't get to you. So things happen for weird reasons, but the key with the draft is where you end up is more important than where you got drafted.
Let's talk about that. What do you think about that fit now with him in Tampa Bay?
It's a great fit. I think he fits that defense perfectly. I think he can play zone or man. I think he can play different techniques. That's one of the things that I noticed at the Senior Bowl, and I noticed it throughout his career. At Sam, he would use different coverage techniques. You know, sometimes he would use a quick jam and try and get, little smaller receivers kind of off their mark a little bit. He didn't mind getting up and playing full press against bigger receivers. He could play off of bigger receivers. He could do a lot of different techniques, and I think that's intriguing. But I think he can play zone and man pretty well. In going to a defense that's coached by Todd Bowles is going to help him tremendously. And I think Bowles wants guys that were like himself. You know, he's a defensive back playing for the Bears who was physical and came up and made tackles when needed to, could make plays on the ball and was physical and smart. And I think Todd Bowles looked at a guy like Zion McCollum and said, that guy's a lot like me. And I think he's going to fit in this defense. Now, they've got Carlton Davis at one corner who is, he's one of the top 5 to 7 corners in the league. But I think Zion's going to have an opportunity to compete for a spot. He's going to have to start on special teams, which my guess is he's not going to have an issue with. and he's going to excel in special teams because he's going to take that as that's his role, that's what he needs to do until he can whittle away at playing time. And one thing I've realized in the NFL, and I think every football level feels it, and it's all relative to that particular level. You know, in high school, by game 10, I was spent. In college, by game 11 or 12, you're done. But what I've seen here with 17 games in 18 weeks, if your depth isn't at a pretty high level, you can forget the playoffs. You can forget getting to the playoffs. You can forget winning consistently because you're not going to have a guy that's going to play 17 weeks. You're not going to have guys that play a lot of times 15, 16 weeks. And so you've got to be able to rely on rookies to step in and make plays. And a great example of that was Garrett Wallow. Garrett Wallow, like Zion, was a fifth-round pick for the Texans. He played at TCU. He came here. We had a time – we had eight linebackers in training camp. We had seven veterans in Garrett. But as things happened, and there was a suspension and then a release and then some injuries, all of a sudden we're playing the Seattle Seahawks. Back week 13, week 14, Garrett Wallow's got to go on the field. And he goes and plays pretty well. And you thought, wow, okay, this guy was ready to go when he got his opportunity. He had been playing on special teams. He got his opportunity. And he started the next couple of weeks. And then some injuries, guys got back. He was able to then be a part of the rotation. And now he could be in a starting position in year number two. And I think that's the way Zion can look at it. In Tampa Bay with Carlton Davis there, it's going to be hard to unseat one of the better guys there. But special teams, go star on special teams. Be that guy they can't take their eyes off of because you'll be the first guy that they think about when there's an opening at corner, when there's an opening on the inside, when that might not be his cup of tea, but they might bump somebody inside so he can play on the outside. He just has to make his presence known and start it on special teams as a fifth-round rookie. Yeah, I think he's still obviously being drafted. There's a priority in drafting him and getting a guy at that particular spot. I mean, our two fifth rounders, like I said, Garrett Wallow is one of them. The other one is Brevin Jordan. And Brevin, over the last half of the year, was a really integral part of our offense and will be going forward. And I think that's what Zion could do in his rookie year is set himself up to be a guy that the Bucs can rely on, not only as the rookie, but going into his second year. Hey, man, Zion could be a guy that starts. We can draft or look at other positions because we know Zion's going to lock down that spot opposite Carlton Davis, and we're good at corner for the next, you know, how many ever years. So I think there's a great opportunity and a great fit for Zion going to Tampa Bay.
You talk about your draft day, and obviously you were doing all of your coverage and your work with the Texans and stuff like that, but were you keeping an eye kind of on Zion and what might happen there, and kind of what were your thoughts kind of as he started to fall a little bit? Because, you know, pre-draft projections, I mean, there were, you obviously they're all over the place, but they were as high as second yep. round and as low as fifth round yep. on the projection. So just kind of what were your thoughts as you were seeing him maybe starting to fall a little bit?
I was hoping he was going to end up in Houston. That's what I was hoping, to be honest. I really was hoping that. I knew in drafting Derek Stingley and signing Steven Nelson that, you know, And I've said this about other players too. And a great example of that was Dak Prescott. I was a big fan of drafting Dak back in 2016 for the Texans. I really, really wanted it to happen. But the Texans that offseason had signed Brock Osweiler. And I had met Dak at the Senior Bowl, interviewed him, spent about 15, 20 minutes with him. It was just, I just loved him. And everything about him, I loved him as a player. I just thought the Texans were a great spot. But once we signed Brock, I said, you know, I don't want us to draft Dak. Because I want him to go somewhere where he has an opportunity to play. And given the fact that we had signed Steven Nelson and we drafted Derek Stingley, I wanted Zion to find a place where he could play, regardless of where he fell into or what. I didn't want him to get in a spot where, you know, they got two young corners and those are the guys they're going to go with. And, you know, Zion's only thought of as a special teams guy. I wanted the fit to be right, too. Well, you're going to Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, you're going to face that guy every single day in practice. That's amazing. I mean, that's really, really cool. But that's what I was thinking about was somebody's going to – once I got to the fifth round, I thought, man, Zion's still on the board. I kept an eye on him the whole time. In large part, like I said, two reasons. One, obviously, because I followed Zion his whole career, interesting. But also because, you know, I wanted Rodney to feel good about signing Zion, that Zion was going to get in the spot. And I think he ended up in a really good spot in Tampa Bay. So when I saw Tampa Bay and I saw his name pop up, I thought all the waiting, all of that, what round, who cares? You're in a really good spot. And it's funny because I felt that way about the quarterbacks that are all drafted. You know, we all talked about, oh, these quarterbacks aren't that good. They're not that good. They're going to fall. There's only one in the first round. The irony of it was they all fell into a really good situation. You know, Desmond Ridder goes to Atlanta. Sam Howell goes in the fifth round, I think a few picks before Zion. He goes to Washington Commanders. I got to feel the Commanders were stoked because Sam Howell could beat Carson Wentz out. I mean, it could happen, as crazy as that sounds. Matt Crown going to the Carolina Panthers. The point in that is you just end up in the right fit. Yeah, it's a round or two later. That's fine. But if you get taken on day two or day three, your contract is 1 year shorter. It's 4 years. If you prove in 3 years that you can play, you'll get re-upped and you'll get big money then. You'll get that second contract and away you go. So it's not a horrible thing to be drafted on day three, especially if the fit and the opportunity are there for you. And I think that's what Zion's got in Tampa.
See, I was in the same boat. I was, every time the Cowboys pick came up, I was like, okay, I want Zion here. I want Zion here. Dallas can use corner. And, you know, so yeah, I was the same way. I was wanting Zion, but I think it's a good fit for him. Well, you didn't get Zion in the Texans, but after the draft, they did go out and sign Tristan. And so his brother, hometown guy, you know, gets a signing, a free agent deal with the Texans. Kind of what are your thoughts on Tristan in that situation?
I love it, and I think he's got a great opportunity too. When I saw that he had signed with Houston, I was thrilled. I texted – it's funny because, you know, in the building, we're not allowed really to break any news or anything. And so there were a couple things sort of – I'd seen, I think, Tristan actually had tweeted it. And so I texted Rodney, and I just said, did Tristan sign with the Texans? It's done. He's like, yes, sir, it's done. And so that was literally about 30 minutes before Nick Caserio came in with us to do live radio. And I was able to talk about, you know, hey, we signed Tristan McCollum. And I was like, I know this happened because his agent told me. So I was able to say that. But it goes back to fit. You know, the Texans did draft Jalen Petrie from out of Baylor at safety. But, you know, they lost Justin Reed. You know, Eric Murray's got one more year left on his contract. Jonathan Owens did some good things at the end of the year, but has not been a bona fide starter. But as an undrafted free agent, I think the same formula sort of fits for Tristan. That is, go crush it on special teams. Let them know who you are. You'll get that opportunity at safety. And I think he fits this defense very, very well. Smart, physical, has, you know, played through some stuff. I mean, his pro day, I mean, I was actually the one that said to Rodney, I was like, Rod, stop him. You got to stop him. That hamstring is just, it's really hurting him. Right. And you can see it. He's grimacing, like, go walk over there and stop him. They'll understand it. He's done everything he needs to do. He played 5 years. He had a good workout prior to this. He's fighting through this. Just, you know, stop him. Make sure he doesn't hurt that any worse. And so he did stop the workout near the end, but he had done enough to that point to show he can run. The athletic ability is there. He's got traits. He's everything you want in a player that, you know, as an undrafted free agent, what do you trust about him? Are there any, you know, there are no skeletons in the closets, none of that. Same thing with Zion. I mean, and I think, as crazy as it sounds, I think it's good for those two to be separate. As much as I wanted both of them, I think it's good for both of them to be away from one another. And we had that situation with AJ Moore and CJ Moore. AJ and CJ were, you know, twins from Ole Miss. And so AJ had come to the Texans and CJ was with the Lions. And when they got together, when we played each other on Thanksgiving Day, it was really cool to see them. But they were really becoming young adults from a distance. And I talked to AJ about that. And he was like, you know, I love my brother, but we needed this. And I think Tristan and Zion will have that same thing, that they'll be apart, really, for the first time. But I think it's going to do Tristan some good to be apart, but, yeah, still be close, you know, here in Houston. But I think, again, the opportunity, it's about opportunity. And I know he's probably disappointed. I thought he would get drafted maybe in the seventh round, but the fact that he was able to pick his destination and to pick here where there is an opportunity, and Lovie Smith is the coach. And there's obviously a lot to learn from Lovie as a defensive coach. So I think Tristan picked a spot that was a good one for him. And I think in the long run, it's going to be a great one. I've seen, Jason, I can't tell you how many undrafted free agents I've seen come through here and make an impact, especially at safety. We had a man named Corey Moore. Corey, back in 2015, he came for a tryout. It wasn't even, he didn't even sign. He came for a tryout because we needed bodies for the weekend. And he impressed them over 3 days. They gave him a contract, and he ended up starting for us 2-3 years down the road. Jonathan Owens is another one. Was an undrafted free agent with the Cardinals. Didn't stick there, but he had a high athletic profile. Smart guy, athletic and fast. Hey, you can do something with him. He just needs an opportunity. He comes to Houston, kind of on and off the practice squad, but finally got on the squad near the end of the year. Has to start against the Chargers due to some COVID and some injuries. Picks off Justin Herbert, has one of the best games we've seen from a safety in a long time, and he ended up being a part of our defense for the next few weeks before he hurt his wrist. So there's opportunity there, especially at that particular position. And Jalen Petrie is going to fit in to this defense, no doubt, from Baylor. But I think Tristan has an opportunity to, A, show it on special teams. We've got a great special teams coach in Frank Ross. I think Tristan will show it off for him. People will get really excited about what he's able to bring. He's always got a smile, but he's willing to learn. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. I mean, he's got great manners, coachable kid. I think that's something that they will love. And in due time, I think Tristan will have an opportunity. And it may not happen right away. It may not. And being undrafted free agent, you know, they always say, hey, look, it's not about whether you got drafted or you didn't or whatever. And sometimes it does. Sometimes it's, well, you know, this guy was a second round pick, so, you know, he's going to get opportunities. But if you consistently play up to your level, which I know that if Tristan does that, he will have an opportunity to play. Hopefully it's here, and I want it to be here, but there will be an opportunity for him. And that's something he's also got to understand. I tell this to every young player. Look, this OTAs, this mini camp, this training camp, these preseason games, 31 other teams are watching you. 31 other teams. So every time you go out there, yeah, it's your coaching staff and your scouting staff that are evaluating you every day, but 31 other teams are evaluating you too. So you'll find an opportunity if you do things right, you're coachable, and you have traits like Tristan's got. I hope it's here. I really hope it's here in Houston, but he'll have an opportunity somewhere. If it doesn't work here, he'll have an opportunity to do it somewhere because he's a whale of a player, and he's one of the guys an organization needs to have around to end up winning games and winning him at a high level.
Another guy that was, you know, draft hopeful for the Bearcats, ended up signing with the Washington Commanders, Jaquez Ezard. What do you see from Jaquez Ezard, and, you know, what have you seen that you think could translate to the NFL?
You know, I talked to a number of scouts, and, when I would tell them, I go down to Sam Houston, I call games. And every time I said that, the first thing they would say to me is, how fast is Ezard? Every single one. It was the very first thing they would tell me, or they would ask me. And now I tell him, I said, look, I think he's a mid 4.5, 4.6 guy. I don't think he's incredibly fast, but I said, every other thing you want in a ball carrying weapon, whether it's a running back or in a slot or a wide, whatever, whenever you put the ball in his hands, magic happens. And they would go, yeah, but how fast? And so they really got hung up on how fast or not fast he was at his size. But in Washington, again, we go back to opportunity. You know, they got Antonio Gibson, and they did keep J.D. McKissic, although it looked like he was going to Buffalo, but then he signed with Washington. J.D. McKissic is probably a great facsimile. That's the wrong way of saying it. He basically is Ezard before Ezard. But I think Jaquez is going to have an opportunity because when you look at what Washington has, like they got, you know, Terry McLaurin, they got Diami Brown, and, you know, deep threats, but they're different than Ezard. And I think when Jaquez gets into camp, and they realize, okay, yeah, he's not the fastest guy, but we don't need him to be fast. We just need him to catch a football in the slot, make somebody miss, and get upfield. And I think that's what
sometimes
he does.
Playmakers just need to be playmakers.
Yeah, exactly. And he, with the ball in his hands, is special. I mean, I don't think anybody that saw him thinks otherwise. And I go back to, I think it was the Nickel State game in the spring season, and he made the catch down the far side. And the DB kind of undercut him as he was landing. So he kind of landed awkwardly. And I thought, oh, okay, play's going to be over. He landed, somehow stayed on his feet and went in for a touchdown. I thought, boy, that guy's special. Well, y'all put it on your Twitter feed, and Brendan Marion, who's now the receivers coach at Texas, retweeted it. And then it dawned on me, oh, yeah, that's right. Ezard played for Marion at Howard. So I texted Brendan, and I said, Coach, that was an amazing play. And he said, John, I'm telling you, when I got to Howard, they told him, he's just a return guy. And he said, John, he was our best player for 2 years, the 2 years that we were there. And I think it speaks to Jaquez because I think people have doubted him over the years. They see him and they're like, he's not that big. But he's a receiver. And all right, we'll see. And then all of a sudden he turns into, you know, Superman out on a field. And I know obviously once you go up in levels that, you know, it starts to change. And so the NFL will be a big change, but he's so electric and he's so good catching the football because that's a big part of this. Their guys are going to be faster and maybe a little quicker that don't catch the ball worth a darn, but he can. And that will help a quarterback. The quarterbacks will be like, I'll throw that guy because I know he's going to catch football. And then obviously once he catches the football, now you got to tackle him and that's not the easiest thing. But I think what held Jaquez back was in 2021, the fall season, just injuries. Just not being able to be on the field and really show it week after week after week. And I think that on top of the fact that, well, you know, he had the injuries and I don't know, we don't think he's that fast, but it was the other way around with, you know what, he did it again for another 10, 11 games, you know, maybe we don't worry too much about the speed, but I think when the injuries were on top of, okay, we don't think he's blazing fast. That was what I think got him to undrafted status. But when he's healthy and when he's on the field, I guarantee you that Wentz and Sam Howell are going to look him up because he's going to be reliable as all get out with whatever they ask him to do. And then, of course, go ahead, punt him the football and see what happens. Yeah. Go ahead, do it. Yeah. Just do it. See what happens. James Madison found out. They found out. And a lot of teams found out. So go and punt him the football in preseason. Let him run one back, and everybody will be screaming his name. And I think he can end up sticking with the Commanders for sure.
You talked about being at Bowers for Pro Day. And, you know, I've talked to several people who were out there and they talk about, you know, especially people who have been to Pro Days here at CM Houston before, said this one just had a different feel to it. I mean, every NFL team is there. And, you know, obviously Zion's a big part of that, you know, Jaquez, Tristan. But there were really a lot of guys with this team. And it's something that's kind of been building with this program. Just kind of what were your thoughts of the feel of the Pro Day when you look around and you see the amount of people that were out there for this Pro Day? Yeah. and just how different it was from, I mean, even PJ Halls didn't have this kind of turnout, and he's a second round pick. Just what you felt out there and kind of what you saw.
Well, first of all, it was too dang hot. Like, dang, man, it's hot again. No, in all seriousness, no, I think, you know, you never realize, I think, what a championship is worth. As crazy as that sounds. And like you said, Sam's had a ton of players over the years. Obviously, Davion Davis is in our building right now. They've been great players. They've been great Sam teams. There have been teams that, you know, got to the national championship game. Didn't win it, unfortunately, but this one did. They won it in the spring, and it was, you know, overcoming adversity. But the thing about it was, you know, you obviously have, you know, there's talent. And there was talent beyond Tristan and Zion and Jaquez. You know, you had, you know, Joe Wallace ended up, I think, going to two different camps looking for an invite. And I always thought, and I told him this too at the Pro Day, I said, Joe, I've called a lot of your games over the last couple of years. I said, I don't know that I saw an FCS lineman that was better, more productive, more dominant at times than you. And he kind of looked at me and I said, yeah, I said, I've seen you play a lot and I wish you the best of luck. And I think you'll get into a camp and hopefully you do. You deserve it. And, you know, keep plugging away because somebody is going to end up signing and finding a really good football player. So you kind of just start stacking, you know, good things, you know, from, I think it was 2011, 2012 when Sam first went to the national championship game, and you just keep stacking those years on top of one another, and there's more and there's more and there's more talent. And then the I don't say, you know, Jaquez was a transfer, but there have been some good transfers that look at it and say, hey, Sam's an opportunity for me. I'm going to go from Howard to Sam. I'm going to go from Georgetown to Sam. And you look over there, and I'm standing there, and I'm talking to John Perry, offensive coordinator, who's a good friend of mine. And I look over, and I pointed at a guy. I'm like, I said, Johnny, who's that? And he goes, oh, that's B.J. Foster. You know, the transfer from University of Texas. And I'm like, well, that's a draftable guy. Seen him play a lot at the University of Texas. You know, Desmond Jackson, the running back, you know, coming from Oklahoma State. You know, success, you know, breeds more success. And obviously moving up in levels is going to be really interesting. But I've been in a lot of different pro days. Houston, Baylor, Rice, A&M. And that one was on par with all of them. I mean, every team was there. There were coaches that had come there. There were teams with multiple scouting personnel there. And it felt like any other pro day that I had been to of those schools that, you know, where I'd been. I'd been at A&M a few weeks prior. And I mean, everybody was there. There were a lot of coaches there. There were some first round talent that was there, but every single team was represented at A&M. Every single team was represented at Sam's pro day. And I think that's going to continue for a while, especially as Sam moves into FBS football. And now it becomes even more of a viable opportunity for kids. B.J. Foster is like, hey, man, I want to stay in state. Texas isn't the right move for me. Hey, Sam Houston's a great opportunity. Casey Keeler is one of the great coaches of all time. I'm going to go there. And I think that's because they've done so well. Then you win a championship, and now you open everybody's eyes. Like, whoa. I hadn't thought about that, but maybe I need to. And then you move up to FBS. You end up having a great season at FBS. You play in a bowl game, and now it's like, whoa, it's the first bowl game in school history. Now you got even more eyeballs, and that's how things can snowball year after year after year. But the pro day itself, man, I'd seen a lot of them, but it was right up there with all of them. And the funny thing is going to all the different pro days. Obviously, I know our scouts, but I get to see the other scouts as well that I'm accustomed to seeing in all these other pro days, and they're there, studying just as much as they were studying the guys at U of H. They're studying there at Sam Houston. So I thought it was a really cool event. I'm always happy going up there. And of course, I feel a small part of the family. You know, John Perry's now in it, and I know him really well. You know, and got to know Casey over the years and calling all the games, but in a Bobby Williams AD. So it was all cool. And then, of course, the two players that most everybody was there for, my good friend is their agent, and so he's there. So I've got all these different, you know, kind of convergence of all these different people that I love and really enjoy being around. It just made for a really cool day, and I'm glad it was successful for the guys that were involved. They really deserved to have that day.
And you touched on this a little bit, but obviously with the move to FBS and Conference USA, how does that change things for Sam Houston, do you think, moving forward in terms of how the players are going to be perceived by NFL teams?
I think that's an interesting part about perception by NFL teams. I'd like to ask some of our scouts, you know, it's not something I really asked them. Well, you know, over the years I've talked to them about, you know, games that I've called, and, you know, hey, I called this game, and they're like, oh, hey, what'd you think about this guy? I don't think it ever really was, oh, well, it's, you know, it's FCS. We don't really talk about them too much. It really wasn't that. But I do think, whether they say it or not, I do think there is a perception of, hey, different level of football. And you go up to FBS, and that's the highest level of football there is in college right now. And you show that what you were doing at FCS, you're doing the same thing at an FBS level. And you're doing it against, you know, teams that have been in FBS for a while. And again, I think that success will just lead to even more success. And there will be players that maybe when you're recruiting them out of high school, they're like, no, I'm thinking Division I. I'm thinking FBS level. That's where I'm thinking. Well, now you can say, well, we are FBS. So, and we're an hour away. You want your family to watch you play in college? I mean, I can speak to that. I went to a school that was, you know, 1,900 miles away, almost 2,000 miles away. My dad, mom and dad never saw me play in college at all. And I look back and I was fine with it, but it would be kind of cool if they would have been there to see it. And I know there are a lot of players that play in the state of Texas. They're like, I'd like to stay in Texas. But the options, yeah, you know, I can go out to UTEP, or, you know, maybe Rice might be not my cup of tea. So what are my options at that point? Well, now one is presented to them in a terrific location, with a terrific head coach, with a tremendous program that is now at FBS, that they say, hey, I'm going to go there. And at that point, then, and I've talked to Coach about this too, and Casey said, then the onus is on me to take those recruits and develop them just as we did Zion and Tristan and those players, and we developed them into, you know, high-level prospects, to take those players now and convert them into even higher-level prospects. And the more you do that, the more it snowballs and Sam Houston becomes a truly viable option. And I said this when I was – Jason, I think the model, if you will, is to look at UCF and USF. Now, I know USF has been down a little bit. But when I was coaching in Florida back in the late 90s, USF and UCF had just started college programs. And it was really Miami, Florida State, and Florida. It was those three schools. And every kid that grew up in Florida wanted to go to one of those three schools. But you do the math, there are 25 scholarships a year, 85 for each team. There were a lot more prospects in Florida than there were opportunities at the big three. And I remember telling my coaches, I was like, you watch UCF and USF, keep an eye on those two, because they're going to get the players that don't get an opportunity at the big three. UCF and USF are going to get those opportunities, and they're going to start turning this thing around. And then all of a sudden, one of those two, if not both, it's going to be like a big five, where now you got opportunities like, hey, maybe Florida, Florida State, Miami don't work for you, but UCF's right there in the middle of the state, and they're playing some darn good football. That's a good place for you. And that's the way USF was down in Tampa. That Tampa area is really, really good. It gave kids opportunities to stay in the state and play at a high level of football. And really, it took the program up a number of notches. Now, USF's in a little bit of a valley right now, but I think they'll get out of it. But UCF has been pretty consistently a strong program. And then, obviously, they hit in 2017. I always love saying I'm right. I was right on that one. And I think I'm right on this one about Sam. It'll be the same way, because somebody like, well, I'm going to go to Texas or Texas A&M. Those are the two schools. Oh, maybe Baylor. But if those don't work, it doesn't fit, coaches don't want them, there's not room, whatever, there's Sam Houston now at the FBS level. And that option wasn't there years past or years prior. But now kids are like, I'm going to take that option. I want to play FBS football. I want to stay in state. And Coach Keeler's one of the best there is. This program is great. Johnny Perry's running this great offense. I want to go play for him. I want to go play for them. And I think that's what ends up happening. Now, will it be immediate? Maybe not. But I do think, given the success that Coach has had recruiting players, bringing in transfers from the transfer portal, I think that will continue for a while, and they'll be able to build it and get to a point where they're very competitive right away. And that's going to gather a ton of attention from players in the state of Texas. They're like, hey, what are my opportunities here to stay in state if Texas, Texas A&M and the Big 12 SEC schools don't work? Well, Sam Houston's right there ready for you and ready for you to compete right away. And I think that's where a lot of young kids are going to look at it and go, I want to go there.
Yeah, you look at the whole package and everything, and it just feels like everything is timing out perfectly. You win a national championship when you do. You know, with the transfer portal the way it is right now, and it is so volatile, and yes, it can hurt, but at the same time, you can go find those gems if you're trying to build a program, and then you make the move to Conference USA. All of this happening within a 2 year, 2-3 year period, it feels like all the pieces are all kind of coming together right at the same time with a chance to really build something special, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And that's – I use this analogy. You're right. It does. I used to teach physics a long time ago, and we used to talk about there's – you know, when an ice cube melts, obviously there's a change in temperature. But there's also a significant amount of energy that has to change the state of that matter. And my point is that, yes, the timing is perfect, but the work it'll take – to take what has been done and then take it to a different state of matter, if you will, is significant. And so the timing is perfect. But now, instead of coasting into FBS, it's time to hit that thing going 95 miles an hour and just dead fire into it and put as much energy and everything you have into it to make sure that momentum from winning the championship, from playing a high level of football, the transfer portal and taking advantage of that and making sure that that momentum isn't squelched by going to FBS and you just don't have all that. No, it's time to just hit it, boom, as hard as you possibly can and get into that thing and stay in the left lane going 95 miles an hour, because you're right, the timing is perfect. You're not having to dodge a bunch of cars. Now it's just a matter of, can you just get in there and stay with those cars? And I think you can. I think there are a lot of things working in Sam's advantage. There's no doubt. But there's no, you know, as they say, you don't walk, you know, tiptoe into the gorilla. You walk in, you bust him right in the face. And that's what they're going to have to do at FBS, is just walk right in and bust it right in the face. And taking advantage of all those things we talked about, living in, you know, being in Texas, being an FBS program in Texas, the transfer portal, and opportunities where other, you know, other players may have tried out other schools and realized, nah, not for me. Hey, come on back to Texas. We're ready for you. And we've seen that over the years with players that weren't even from Texas. You know, Jaquez, we talked about, Schley, tight end from Georgetown. A lot of guys have come from other places and did so because they knew of Sam, what they had seen in the playoffs in prior years. Now there's going to be even more that people are and kids are going to be able to see. But to be an FBS program from the state of Texas is going to help them as much as anything has helped them over the last how many ever years. Throw that in with the transfer portal opportunities, and I think the right and requisite energy that's needed to take it to a different level is going to be there, Jason.
Awesome. Good stuff. Well, hey, I appreciate you joining us. What's on tap for you next?
I think some sleep.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to happen, but you know, we got the schedule released Thursday night, got OTAs and mini camps. And then really, honestly, there'll be a little bit of a break when the players go off for the summer, about 5-6 week break. We'll keep doing our stuff at HoustonTexas.com and keep writing. But really for me, it's about studying the 2023 class. Get that draft class ready already. So I'll be working on that. In fact, once I get off, Jason, right now, I'm going to go watch a little bit more Mississippi State and a couple defensive guys they got. And Alabama's got a few, so we'll study those. So we'll start getting ready well in advance for next year's draft.
All right. Well, keep an eye on my guy Tristan for me. Let us know what's going on there. But always appreciate all of your love for Sam Houston. We appreciate having you up here and, you know, look forward to having you around. A lot more to come.
Jason, I appreciate it, man. Thank you very much.
All right. Appreciate it. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. Want to thank John Harris for joining us. Really good stuff there. And always appreciative of everything he does. Big supporter of Sam Houston and what we have going on here in Huntsville. So want to thank you for joining us here. We're getting close to the end of the athletic season here. Just a little bit left to go with our sports. So I'm not sure what our schedule is going to look like, but we'll have some stuff for you over the summer as well as we start to roll out some new offerings as we look ahead to the really the fall of 22. So I want to thank you for joining us here all season long here on BSN Extra. BSN Extra is recorded in the all-new Bearcat Sports Network studio at the Wood Forest Bank Athletic Center. This week's episode was written and produced by Jason Barfield. All music is courtesy ScottHolmesMusic.com. This has been a presentation of the Bearcat Sports Network.